Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. My guest this week is Aaron Torres, the infamous Alan Torres of Kentucky Sports Radio and the Perth Bandits' number one ticket holder. Aaron is the author of the article, "There's No Proof New Zealand Will Better Prepare RJ Hampton for the NBA Than College." We have a chat about the particulars of that article and RJ Hampton's decision in general. Now, I'm not Yarn Event, I'm not the Velvet Sledgehammer, I wasn't there to put Aaron on trial. I obviously took exceptions to and disagreed with some, if not many, of the things that Aaron said in his article, and we fleshed them out and have a nice little chat. I hope you enjoy. Let's start from the top. So let's actually just talk about the announcement. So you obviously watched it on GetUp. And what did you think about the process? Because, like, here's what I took from it, right? So this is what came directly out of his mouth. I've kind of tried to ignore what everyone else has said, journalists and media. Just I'm trying to hear what actually RJ Hampton has to say. And he said, "Best route for me to live like a pro, play with grown men every day, and not have to juggle books and basketball, and just focus on my main goal, which is pro ball in the NBA." What did you think about that announcement and that particular line in particular?
So, you know, obviously, yeah, I watched it. I'll say this, you know, I don't know how closely you guys followed it or if there was a tip off that this announcement was coming, but, I watched it obviously from the college perspective. He was down to two colleges, well, three technically. And, obviously this professional thing had kind of crept up. And so I watched it. I can't say that I was totally surprised. Right. A lot of the college reporters that also, you know, we have reporters in this country that just cover high school recruiting, and the guys that are really plugged into that line of work were all leaning towards over the last couple weeks. by the way, I just went on my Twitter, you know, I did a little funny, best of, you know, angry tweets this morning.
Yeah, I saw that.
And some guy just because I joked, I said, you know, my bad on creating an international incident. Some guy on Twitter just said international incident, embellishing facts again, it seems. So anyway, so I'm still 24 hours later getting it. But so anyway, the recruiting writers all said that he was probably going to end up going pro in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, I wasn't totally surprised by it. And I'll tell you because – one, he had been leaning that way, but two, on top of that, is the fact that I've been aware of this Next Stars program for a while. And yeah. I told you before we started recording, I'm surprised somebody hasn't chosen this path sooner, because as RJ Hampton alluded to, books aren't for everybody. College isn't for everybody. And I think it took a special kid to take this chance and take this opportunity. So I didn't really get into my initial thoughts when he kind of said what he said, but those are kind of just some of my initial thoughts to begin with is, he's a super bright kid. I've been around him a little bit. I know his dad a little bit. I told you this off air. I think he's going to be a really good representative for the program. I wasn't surprised that he chose to go overseas. And like I said, I'm frankly kind of surprised knowing what I've read about the Next Stars program. I don't claim to be an expert like many of the people listening, mm-hmm. but I'm surprised that it took so long for somebody to make that decision.
I mean, we had the Next Stars has been around for, this is its now second season. Last year it had one applicant, Brian Bowen, who played with the Sydney Kings. He was sort of committed to the University of Arizona and then had that NCAA violation or what have you, and was disqualified and decided to come to the NBL. He's the first and only. Before that, they had Terrence Ferguson. He wasn't a Next Star. He had just been recruited and brought to the NBL by Joey Ryder, the Adelaide 36ers. It remains to be seen whether the Next Stars in the NBL has improved his A, draft stock, and B, sort of pro basketball NBA aptitude. That will remain to be seen until the draft in June. Going back to the announcement by Hampton, I think what's really interesting is when he was first asked, right? He said, "Why did you make this decision?" I think it was Jalen Rose who asked that. And his first thing out of his mouth wasn't that line of, "I want to pro ball, I want to play with grown men." His first thing was, "I want to set the trend. I've never wanted to be normal." And I feel like his decision is partly, I think obviously he likes the idea of playing overseas for sure. And obviously the money's nice, but
But also it's that third thing of you said earlier on, being a trendsetter, being a bit different, being sort of the internet age. I got a real sense when he was giving that answer that he was like, I'm gonna be a bit shocking, a bit provocative, a bit different. It was kind of it had a sort of muckraking, sort of childish quality to it almost. Did you find that?
No, because I know RJ and you know, Joseph, I was telling you this before we started recording. You know, I can't speak for any other country, but in the United States, and I'm somebody that kind of follows the high school scene. I wouldn't call myself an expert, but every year, every 2 years, there's always guys that are kind of the guys in a respective group of kids, and everybody kind of follows their lead. And RJ is one of those kids. And so he's a guy that even kids that are maybe a year older than him or whatever, you know, they look up to him and they follow him. And it was actually very interesting as somebody who does follow the high school scene going on his Instagram today and seeing how many guys reached out and said, congratulations, go get him, make us proud. Because I know him a little bit, that part doesn't really surprise me. Now, you know, I'll be honest. Maybe it was a little bit arrogant, but that's how he plays in a good way, right?
Like more like mischievous. It was sort of
yeah.
Hey, I've got something, you know, show and tell, and there it is. It was very, I got a vibe anyway.
Yeah, no, and that's kind of the you know, to use the term that everybody uses in basketball these days, that's the swag that kid has. I mean, it is legitimate. It is real. We can get into it later, but it's why I think he's going to be successful in the NBL next year. He does have that kind of attitude, like you said, mischievous. I think he wants to be a trendsetter. I think he wants kids to know, hey, you don't have to go to college if you don't want to. The ironic part about this whole thing is that he's actually a really good student. And so yeah. I do think, you know, yeah, when he says, you know, I want to be the first to do this, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say I do think he wants to open a path for other kids. I do think he wants to create opportunities for other kids that don't want to go to school. And that's kind of the ironic part about all this is that, like I said, he's a good student. He could have played. And by the way, this was one thing I said in the article that, you know, I'm persona non grata in Australia for. I said he could have chosen the path that, you know, hundreds of other thousands of other great high school players have chosen in the past. And he decided to do the opposite. He decided to, as you alluded to, Joseph, create his own trend. And I thought it was a cool announcement. I thought, you know, it was very RJ Hampton based on the experiences that I've had with him. And as I've told you a few times now, I actually think that he's going to be a really good representative of that program. And I also think he's really going to open some eyes, by the way, to how good of an actual basketball player he is.
Neat. I think what's really understated here is the influence of his father, Rod Hampton, who played at Michigan State University and played pro overseas. I think when you've got a father who's played overseas, now I don't know exactly where, but I know that it was mentioned by Jay Williams on that interview. When you got something like that going on, and also the fact that the whole family's coming to New Zealand, I didn't know that. They're all coming, apparently, or at least have the offer to come. What I also found interesting and kind of bit not maybe not sad, but was the fact that when he used that exact line, you know, I don't want to have to juggle books and basketball. And we talk about setting a trend. Like, does that set a bad example of, you know, over specification and, you know, I'm going to be totally an athlete, shut out the books. I don't think that's what he meant, but in a way, you know, juggle books and basketball, it's kind of like, there's no problem playing basketball and being a student athlete. There's merit in that. Don't you think?
100%. And, you know, to dig into part of why I was frustrated, So let me backtrack, by the way, because I haven't even explained myself. And this is something that I kind of expressed to you off air, Joseph. And ironically, when the good folks at the NBL actually reached out to me, I've communicated with them a little bit. It's something I expressed to them. This article that I wrote, it was never intended to be a shot at the NBL, what that league has done, the opportunity that they're or Hampton at all. And what it is that here in the States, there is what, and on my own podcast, I talked about it a little bit after the RJ Hampton decision. There's what I call a war on college basketball in the sense that, you know, the youth culture in college in basketball is get to the NBA as quickly as possible. You know, because everyone thinks that the college system is so unfair. And for people who don't really understand the college system, you go to school, You get your education paid for. You don't get you get a small check every month. Obviously, it's not relative to if you're playing in front of 15,000 people, you're not making $1 million, but you get a couple hundred bucks spending money. You get room and board. You get, by the way, unlimited meals. You get nutrition. You obviously are working with a strength and conditioning coach.
I read that
coach.
In your article, yeah.
Yeah, so you basically, and I always say this, is you as a college kid get free room and board, free food, unlimited food, free health care, and a check every month. And if that's still not enough for you as an 18 or 19 year old, then yeah, you should go pro. But so the point is that everyone is so critical of this college system we've created. And I do think that my bigger problem, Joseph, wasn't with RJ Hampton's decision. It's with the media, like, oh, screw college basketball. And it's like, no, our system that we have here, it's not perfect, but we do great things for thousands of kids. And what I'm personally afraid of, one of the more famous coaches in college basketball, John Calipari, has talked about this, because the NBA is looking at the possibility of allowing high school players to re-enter the NBA draft. And by the way, I think it's going to happen in large part because of RJ Hampton. I don't think Adam Silver likes his best high school players going overseas. But I think we've devalued education in our basketball culture. And it's something that I've talked about, extensively on every platform that I have. And my fear is that as we slowly transition to a world where, these kids can go straight to the NBA, we're going to have kids at 14, 15 years old saying, I don't need to worry about school. I'm going to the league when I turn 18. And it's like, no, Joseph, there's 450 spots in the NBA at any given time. Even the G League, there's only so many spots. And that's my kind of great fear is that, we're so, and this is more of an American cultural thing, but we're so devaluing education and the importance, like, hey, by the way, you could go to college and, look, we saw what happened with Zion Williamson. He got hurt. Thankfully, he was fine. But I mean, his career could have been over. And even for the great NBA players, most of them are going to have to do something in life besides play basketball. There's only so many James Hardens and Russell Westbrooks that are going to make enough money to play for the rest of their careers. So that's a long-winded way of me saying, I agree with you. And it's frustrating that our American culture over here has totally devalued that. Yeah. And I do think, I do think to a degree that RJ Hampton quote plays into it.
I think I just didn't like that exactly the phrasing of like juggling books. I thought if you want to say, I feel like the curriculum, I feel like, because in the NCAA, I believe that time is limited with training sessions. Trainings have a certain time. You can't spend time. So if he'd phrased that a little bit differently, it would have put the onus more on sports rather than, it's a drag putting my head in books, which I don't think is what he meant, but it was just a phrasing. Let's go on. Let's talk about your actual article. So the title of it is "There's No Proof New Zealand Will Better Prepare RJ Hampton for the NBA Than College." So I guess the operative words I took from that are "no proof" and "prepare." So we're not talking about, like, we're not really talking about RJ Hampton's, or in your article, you're not really talking about RJ Hampton's draft position or draft stock or likelihood. We're not more talking about player development. Am I right?
Yeah, because, and it goes back to the original question that you asked me when we started. What did I think of the initial statement? And that was the genesis of the whole article. And it got misconstrued, and I probably said some things about the NBL that I shouldn't have. But his exact quote was, "This is the way to best prepare myself for the NBA."
Yes.
And this and isn't you a doubt- knock. What's that?
And you were doubtful of his assertion that New Zealand or the NBL is the better route than college.
Yeah. And one thing I regret about the article, and again, I had no idea it was going to blow up the way that it did, was, like I said, I have a podcast and I talked about this a lot on the podcast. And I didn't write it because I don't know if you're a writer, Joseph, but sometimes you just write stuff and there's just not a place that stuff fits to put it in. And so one thing that I said was, if this really is about basketball, if it really is about the best situation, it's not even college basketball. Like I told you, the G League, the NBA minor league has a system where high school players can come in and play in the system. By the way, as we discussed, Adam Silver not happy about the fact that RJ Hampton chose Australia over the G League. But I only bring that up because, you know, that was my assertion. Is it's not a knock on the NBL, but when RJ Hampton says this is the best path, I would argue that for sure the G League is a better option. And I would argue there are European places that are better. Now, if he just said, I want to go to a place, you know, like you said, you know, the difference between balancing books and this and that, blah, blah, blah. If he had just said, I'm ready to be a professional, I'm looking for a place where I think I can play high level basketball and also acclimate well to the culture, then that's fine. That's fine. But, you know, when you use Luka Doncic, and Luka Doncic never played college basketball, obviously, but Luka Doncic played in the second best league in the world. Now, I'm not an expert to say if the NBL is third or fifth or
the NBL would be would be top 10. You could argue top five. That would be a stretch, but certainly in the top seven would be, I think, pretty fair.
Absolutely. And so that was kind of the assertion. And look, the article, obviously, I tried to find the right headline that I thought would resonate, but certainly I didn't think it was going to resonate the way that it did. But yeah, that was kind of the assertion, is that, again, no knock on the NBL, but, you know, he said, this is the one to best prepare me. Well, yes, there's other places that will better prepare you than the NBL, and it's still grown men. It's still great competition. And then, like I said, if he had just worded it differently, I would have felt differently, and I probably wouldn't have even written the article. But when he said, this is the best path for me to prepare to be a professional, I was just like, I just disagree. And if everyone in Australia hates me for that, so be it. So be it. I apologize.
No problem. Let's go. So looking at it here, you said, after some pretty extensive research on Hampton's new team and league, you came to your assertion. Mike, what was your extensive research?
Well, first of all, and this is another thing I didn't put in the article, but I texted a few people in basketball that I trust. And I just said, you know, how good is this league? And they said exactly what you said. They said, it's good. It's not the best international league in the world, but it is good. I think I was being a little hyperbolic when I compared it to a major college basketball league.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think I was being hyperbolic. And you know, maybe if I had thought about it a little bit better and I really considered that this could make waves in Australia, I wouldn't have put that. And I do regret it, because one thing I told you off air, Joseph, and one thing that I told the NBL people is this was never meant to be an attack on the league. And so anyway, to answer your question, you know, I texted some people, like I told you, they basically said, look, it's not the best, international league in the world. It's far from the worst. It'll be good competition, whatever. Then I'm not going to lie. I did what anybody else would do that's ignorant, and I'll admit I'm ignorant on your show. You know, I went and Googled, you know, stat leaders and award winners. Yep. And like, I hate to say it, like, you know, Isaac Humphries, Harry Froehling, the last two rookies of the year, like they couldn't get off a bench in college basketball. And credit to Isaac Humphries, he's played in the NBA since then. But so to answer your question, I texted a few people just to get a baseline, like, am I going to make an ass out of myself? Which I did anyway. But, you know, I was like, am I going to make an ass out of myself saying all this? And they said, look, you know, the league is what it is. And then, like I said, I searched, you know, award winners and you know, stat lines and stuff like that. And I just felt pretty confident saying that, you know, this doesn't match up with what RJ Hampton said.
Did you reach out to anyone like at the Breakers, like the New Zealand Breakers, like a Matt Walsh or a Sean Marion, their operators there, or anyone in the media in the NBL?
No, I didn't. And yeah, I'll readily admit I didn't. I didn't reach out to anybody in the NBL. I know there's a lot of, I've been introduced to a lot of the reporters who cover the NBL in the last 12 hours or so, 24 hours or so. I didn't, you know, but listen, I also don't think, and listen, you can
it
have.
It wasn't an NBL. Oh, sorry, Aaron.
No, go ahead.
Like, I think you wrote your article, as you said, you didn't do it as an NBL attack. It wasn't an NBL-based article. It was an RJ Hampton college-based article, from what I guess.
Yeah, it was more, and like I've told you a few times, like the intention was that everybody is just ready at the first opportunity to tear down college basketball. And they, and you know, the assumption is that any professional league anywhere in the world is better than college basketball. That's not true, obviously. And I'm not going to compare the NBL to college basketball, although, as I told you, I do think the NBL is a step up from college basketball. But, you know, but no, it wasn't an NBL-based article. What the article was intended to say was RJ Hampton's taking his own path, good for him. But what my vision of it was when he said this is the best possible path, I guess, like you said, it was, in a way, a defense of college basketball. Right. I didn't really realize it at the time, but yeah, I guess that's how I would best describe it. But to defend college basketball, you know, I had to kind of go at the NBL a little bit, which I obviously did.
Happens. My next question is, in the initial, I think you've redacted it now, but originally you said that the champions were the Perth Bandits. That's the one that a lot of people have jumped on top of. Listen, Wildcats, Bandits, I can see how that mistake can be made. Where did you get Bandits from?
The back of my head. I don't know. I was doing so much research and I put it together and I just want to get the article out because it was getting late in the day. And I don't have a good answer. I just assumed, and by the way, I assumed that every person that would end up reading the article was a college basketball fan. Some of them would say, hey, dude, you're wrong. He should go pro. He should make money. Some of them would say, dude, I agree. You know, he shouldn't be going overseas. I didn't think like 3/4 of Australia was going to read the article. So shout out to you guys. The internet travels fast over there. I don't know
what day it is. You'd be very, very surprised. Very surprised. And I think
I'm not surprised. Here's the thing. You know what's funny about all this? I'm a fucking, excuse my language, I'm a basketball nerd. I love basketball, and I love, you know, one of my favorite topics to talk about is the globalization of basketball. And I was a guy that, you know, I was in on Ben Simmons early. By the way, Josh Green, who's playing college basketball. He's a stud. I've known him since he was 15 years old. I love Josh Green. So I'm very aware of how popular the sport is. Bandits, it's funny. The freaking Bandits. I'll tell you what though. If you type in Perth on Twitter right now, it'll auto populate with Bandits. So I created over there.
Listen, I don't hate the name because obviously introduced species over here in Australia, big damage to the environment. They're the Perth Wildcats. I'd rather condone criminal violence than introduce species. So I don't hate it. And also, Commissioner Silver, when I think his first draft, when he called out a guy by the name of Atia Majok, who played with that time the Gold Coast Blaze, he pronounced it Blazers. These things happen. That's Commissioner Silver. So it was funny. We laughed. We're not going to lie. We laughed at your expense, Aaron. But, you know, it was no harm, no foul.
Well, listen, shout out to Mark Gottfried, or what's his name? Mike Gottfried. That guy hates me, man. I don't know who that is. Somebody on Fox Sports Australia.
He's
like, good typo, bro. And I literally said, I'm like, dude, good catch. You know, that's an inexcusable thing for my part. You know, I appreciate it, blah, blah, blah. And he just had no patience for my apology. So shout out to, I don't know, what the hell's his name? I'm trying to find it real quick.
Just quickly, have a look. Why you look for that name? Just quickly, aside from basketball, how does it feel to kind of be like a little bit of sort of an internet ire? It'll be over in a week or so, but how does it feel now to kind of like take a bit of heat?
I have been in the middle of a few of these, probably 3 or 4 in my career.
Right.
So it's not a huge deal. And literally what I did was when it first started blowing up, you know what I did, honestly, is I just deleted Twitter from my phone and went on about my day and said, I'm not going to let this, you know, get under me. You know what I will say, and I think I told you this, but you know, I was a little disappointed. I think there were some people that I consider friends in America, and people that I think know, know my body of work, and know that, you know, I do some kind of homework. It's Mark Gottlieb, by the way. Mark Gottlieb is the guy who came. But anyway, you know, it was a little disappointing, but hey, you know, listen, my whole thing is they're entitled to their opinions. I'm entitled to mine. And so none of this stuff ever bothers me. because I believe what I wrote. And I, you know, the one thing I'll never do is apologize for having strong opinions. So it didn't really bother me. And like I said, you know, I've been through a few of these. And as you just said, whether you're right, whether you're wrong, whether you're getting, you know, a lot of F-bombs sent your way in direct messages or otherwise, like you said, they're over in a day or two anyway. I mean, that's the great thing about the internet, right? I don't know how it is over there in Australia.
That's the same way.
People get mad for about 24 hours. And look, somebody else is going to be tweeting about the Perth Bandits tomorrow, and you guys can get all over him too, okay?
Someone created Twitter. It's pretty funny. Further on the article, let's go there. So you said, but playing in this league, meaning the NBA, will be a far cry from playing in a junior mini NBA, which everyone has made it out to be. We've spoken about that. But then you went on the article to say, what if these grown men aren't all that good? Now, we'll come back to the phrasing of that, but actually we will. So what if these grown men aren't that good at all? Do you regret that wording, or do you still kind of, would you change it, or you still sort of hold up to that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, look, they're grown men, right? The one thing that I will not apologize for, and this is going to make you so mad, like Andrew Bogut, I know he's an icon. I get it. I mean, his best days are many days gone, and he can't stay healthy. I watch all these playoff games. He plays 4 minutes. Like, I can't, and that was part of it, right? Like, that guy's the MVP of the league. And I looked at the stats and, you know, I don't know, maybe there was some selective voting for him. I don't know if he was really the best player or not. By the way, you know what else is crazy about all this? So I went to the University of Connecticut at the same time Josh Boone did. I love Josh Boone. I didn't even know he was in the NBL. That's my guy. I'd go to war for that guy. So anyway,
they had a good rivalry, Boone and Bogut, most definitely.
Did they really? Okay.
You know, over here in the NBL, for sure. Oh, yeah, it was, you know, Boone versus Bogut. It was great. It was great to watch.
I'm on Team Boone on that one. So, I think the point I was trying to get to, and again, you know, I can't speak for other writers. Mm-hmm. I try to write in an engaging, conversational, interesting way. And this has happened to me many times, so don't even worry about it, but like, people take every word I say literally. And so, like, you know, like when I say it's the equivalent of a high major basketball college program, like, that was flat out wrong and I shouldn't have typed that. But, like, you know, everyone takes literally, well, what about this guy? Like, you know, like, I guess the point I'm trying to make is the players are really good. They're physically and emotionally going to challenge RJ Hampton. But as it's like I said a few minutes ago, this isn't the best league in the world, and it's not a knock on anybody. That's just a reality. And so, like I said, you know, I don't really regret writing that because it goes along with the thesis of my article, which is that if this is really about the best possible basketball decision, then this wasn't the decision RJ Hampton should have made.
I think Bogut, I mean, I agree with you there. Bogut's very best basketball is behind him. I think he's still a really good player. And I think you quote in the article that since 2014, he hasn't scored over 6 points per game. I mean, that last year that he came closest to 6 points per game was that 73-9 team. I think
like 70 points a game that year. They were unbelievable. Yeah. He should have more than six. No, I'm kidding.
I think Bogut's value then and now has points would not be the best metric to go by, would not be the best. And he had a good year. I mean, I think more than anything, like, you look at the NBL, I did a quick look through the league. There are 96 roster spots. Of those 96, 14 have NBA experience. And by that, I mean regular season experience or have been drafted in the NBA. Now, I hope I'm right when I say that. I did a bit of research myself.
No, but it's okay. And see, this goes back to the point that I made on my podcast that I didn't make in writing. How many guys in the NBA G League right now have NBA experience? I would get to significantly more.
Lots. 50%.
And so, and of course, and it is the NBA minor league. Guys come up, guys go down, they do this, they do that, blah, 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 blah. So again, that is probably my only real regret about this article is that, and you can go back and listen to my podcast. I talked about it. I said, if this is really about the best possible path, he should one of the G League. And that's my only regret is I just wish that I had said that in the article is, you know, if it was really about this, just, you know, he should be in the G League right now. I guess that's my only regret, real regret about the article.
What's that one? going on. So looking here, like, okay, so then let's talk about Harry Froehling and Isaac Humphries. So in your article,
Froehling came
out. He reached out to you,
man.
I know. I saw
he
that.
Called me a peanut. I don't know what that means.
He's reached. I've said some negative stuff about him in the past, and he's reached out to me as well. So don't feel bad.
But ask unless on Twitter, and I'll tell them that to his face too.
Wow. I like Harry Froehling. I think he's a good guy. And I think he's a good player. I think his struggles at Marquette. He did struggle at Marquette. You're right when you say it. Isaac Humphries and Froehling both didn't really manage to get off the bench in college. There's no doubt about that. But I guess their sort of maturation in the NBL is kind of a proof of the NBL's ability to develop and prepare players for the NBA. I mean, there are two guys who did poorly in college, came back to the NBL, performed well, and now obviously Isaac Humphries is in the NBA. And Froehling is now, he's got workouts with the Celtics, Knicks, Thunder, Jazz, Pelicans, and Spurs. He's either had them or is going to have them. I just sort of get your thoughts there. So the question really is, college basketball, does it develop a bit better in that way, using them as an example?
Yeah, no, and it's something that a lot of people have brought up. And I think, by the way, it can be a testament to, like any coach, the coach that coached Isaac Humphries in college, he's a Hall of Famer, but maybe he just didn't know how to use the kid appropriately, or maybe for whatever reason, just didn't vibe. And so that was actually something I was thinking about. And I would love to either, what's ironic is I've actually had Isaac on my podcast before.
Oh.
I'd either love to talk to him or, like you said, make a phone call to the NBL, the Sydney Kings, and figure out what was he doing that allowed him to get that opportunity with the NBA. So, it's interesting. Like, I do think that there's something to be said that the college system didn't work for them, and that they did have relative success in the NBL. Now, I would add that I looked up their stats. They weren't world beaters. They weren't the best players in the league.
Oh, no.
So... yeah, I don't really have a good answer as to why that is. And credit to Isaac Humphries for, reverse engineering his career, in the States, hoping to get to the league, has to go back to Australia to get back to the States. I think you could look at it as two ways. I mean, obviously the way I interpreted it is, if he sucked in college, and I don't want to say he sucked, but if he didn't live up to those expectations mm-hmm. in college, he did in the NBL, and that means that college is obviously tougher. But to your point, something happened in Sydney. I don't know if he just regained his confidence or, maybe it's the RJ Hampton. He didn't have to focus on books. He just was able to focus on whatever. I don't have a good reason as to why that was or why it didn't work for him in the U.S., mm-hmm. but all that stuff. So I don't have a good reason. I'm just genuinely curious. As to why he had success, but I could see it kind of both ways. I can certainly see it from your point of view, but I, as an outsider, I could probably see it in a lot of people, selfishly from my perspective, have seen it from my point of view as well.
I think because then it goes the other way, like Devin Hall, who played 4 years at Virginia. He was a second team all ACC selection in his senior year. He averaged quite good numbers in the NCAA, 12 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists on high percentages, came to the NBL and was with the Kansas Taipans. That was unfortunately the worst team last year. They only won a handful of games, 6-22. His numbers were well down as well. So what I'm kind of getting at is the stats can take you either way. They can read either way you want to read them. I think Froehling and Humphries are a good example of where the league's developed guys who are college castaways. And I think that, and when we talked about the weight training and stuff like that, and I think this would be my biggest criticism of college basketball is that it really is a coach's league. I mean, we talked about the four teams that Hampton was thinking of going to and the teams that he's come over here with. Those college programs, those coaches are known here in Australia, Bill Self, Penny Hardaway, Coach K, and Calipari. Do you know who the coach of the Breakers are or is?
I know Andrew Gaze is a coach over there. I'm not sure.
He was a coach with the Kings. Yep.
He's not anymore?
No, he's not anymore, unfortunately. He was coach for 3 years. They've since replaced him with Will Weaver.
Okay. Will Weaver. I knew that one for sure.
But that's my point. I mean, the longest serving coach in the top four teams is 6 years, a guy by the name of Trevor Gleason of the Perth Wildcats. The longest serving coach. Who's the Perth? Trevor Gleason?
No, the Perth Bandits. Who's their coach?
Soon to be signed. Whereas Mike Krzyzewski's been at Duke now for nearly 40 years. He started in 1980, so he's been there 39 years. And my thought is this, is that when a player comes, like, let's say Hampton, he's going to go to the Breakers, and their coach, Kevin Braswell, I think they may be in the middle of a change. He's going to look at that team and go, where's Hampton's best situation? On the floor, off the floor, he's got unlimited time with the guy. Whereas when you go to a college program, and this is just an opinion, Mike Krzyzewski's been doing it for 40 years. Mike Krzyzewski will be there. He was there before. Let's say RJ Hampton went there. He was there before RJ Hampton. He'll be there after RJ Hampton. And I think that's what happened with Froehling and Humphreys. They went to a program that was like, we've got our way. You know, it's not quite working out. The end of the bench is where you're going to sit. And I think that's where perhaps the NBL is better for that preparedness.
Well, I mean, I would argue. Now, first of all, I think Harry Froehling is a unique scenario. And I think probably Isaac Humphreys, too, in the sense that, you know, there is a very obvious land. Like, if college just doesn't work out for them, there's a very obvious place to go. And that's back home to the NBL. And, you know, with their ties there and their experience there, I assume that, you know, someone's going to give them a chance just because they're known commodities. I do disagree with you, though, kind of, you know, from the very simple sense that whether you've been a coach a place 1 year or 50 years, you know, at the end of the day, you got to win games. And if you don't win games, you're going to be fired. And the ironic part is, you know, John Calipari, every single year when he gets to the NCAA tournament, he's only won one. He had Anthony Davis on his team. And every year there's a segment of the fan base that says this guy should be fired, even though it's preposterous. So I don't know that I buy that. Now, look, you know, and this goes back to the reason that RJ Hampton made the decision that he did. The unlimited practice time, the unlimited time being in the gym. Look, I think working with a coaching staff, I think that's certainly a variable. You know, what I can say is I do think that at all these top programs, I think most of these kids understand, like, hey, if I want to, you know, and the other thing, too, you got to remember is the great players come through these programs 1 year after the other, right? So Duke had Brandon Ingram. Then they had Jason Tatum. Then they had Marvin Bagley. Then now they have Zion Williamson. Next year they got a couple guys. And so I think they all come through these programs and realize that if I'm only going to put in work when coach is in the gym for the number of hours that he can be with me, I'm not going to reach my goal and get to the next level. So I'm just saying this to say, and this isn't, I can understand your point of view, but one, I don't think that, you know, a kid just because he can only be with a coach for a certain number of time is going to only do that. As a matter of fact, you know, I think coaches take pride that their kids are in the gym after they leave. But I also do kind of disagree with the concept that, like, you know, while it is a coach's sport in college, coaches still have to win games to keep their jobs. And so they're going to play the best players. I can tell you definitively that for whatever reason, it didn't work out with Isaac Humphreys. He was not one of the best players. They had better players at his position. And I think Calipari did everything he could to give them opportunities. And so anyway, I'm just going on a tangent here.
Yeah.
But I do kind of disagree with that concept.
I think that you said about, like, you know, coaches got to get wins, and that's very true. But I think a lot of the college coaches, a lot of their winning is done in the recruiting process. I think they win a lot of games because they, in a way, until now, with the RJ Hampton and others, have sort of monopolized talent. And I mean, you look at someone like John Calipari, you know, good coach, won a lot at Memphis, but doesn't have that job anymore for going outside the legality of recruiting. So, you know, I think there's more, the college coach, three quarters of his job is recruiting, and then a quarter of his job is, you know, getting that coaching. And I've read a lot of books. Andrew Gaze's book is probably the big one I point to, A Kid, A Ball, A Dream, where he talks about trainings in the NCAA are militant because they're timed. It's you get there, it's you listen to the coach, bang, bang, bang. I think when you're a pro, it's a bit different. It's a little bit more consultative. And that's something he said in his book.
Can I add one thing really quick, and you can jump in at any point on this?
Yeah, sure.
One of my arguments, by the way, and it goes back to the thesis, RJ Hampton, is this the best spot? Explain to me, and this is something I should have maybe done more research on, 28-game regular season over a six-month period. So you're basically playing one game a week, right?
It's October through March if you make the finals. Yeah, but it's a 28-game regular season. So it is about, like, you go pretty much 1 week where you play one game and then another week where you play two. So it's kind of one, two, one, two, one, yep. two, like that.
See, and that was part of my argument with RJ Hampton, too, is that, schedule. You know, he okay. talked about the pro lifestyle. And so to me, the pro lifestyle, and I think I even said this in the article, is, you know, you play a game on Friday night, you hop on a plane.
Games, yeah.
Yeah. And like, by the way, that's a real thing. There's something in the NBA called the rookie wall for a reason. And so that was another thing was like, I mean, is this, if you're playing 28 games over the course of, you know, five months, 4.5 months, plus playoffs is another 5, 6, 7 games, whatever. That was another big part of my contention. I'm not going to lie, man. I'm a little bit tight on time here, but I'm happy to answer any kind of final questions that you have.
Yeah, I'll just quickly. I mean, one thing I thought was like Terrence Ferguson. You said like his sort of stock that went down the NBA, and in a way, you're kind of true. He was projected at 18, went 21 in the draft, and his career is. I actually think he's having a nice little progressive career for a very slight 3-and-D wing, but he's not too bad. I guess.
Yeah, real quick on Terrence Ferguson. Like my whole thing is, you know, everyone. You know, and this is again the American media pushing their agenda, and I think most people are pro. They're pro kids going pro. And they talk about Terrence Ferguson as if he's this unbelievable success story. Like he averaged 7 points a game as a second year player last year. I mean, you know, Trae Young is a rookie after 1 year in the college system.
Backing up Paul George, though.
Yeah, but I mean, I just feel like, you know, if we're going to use him as this incredible success story,
It's not, if we're going to use him as this great success story, it's not richly compelling. I can see that.
Yeah. And I would also argue, by the way, and I made sure to make this clear in the article. I think I said in the article, that's not to say that if he went to college, he'd be this unbelievable all-star. It's like, no, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that, like you kind of just alluded to like use him as this unbelievable success story is like, I don't know, man, come on.
Yeah, fair enough. I actually noticed at the end of your comments about Isaac and Humphreys, you went just stop and you put 8 exclamation marks. I was about to say there's a lot of exclamation marks. There's only one in Ernest Hemingway's novel Old Man in the Sea. You got 8 in there. So
eight deep. Times the writer is Ernest Hemingway. Obviously, come on, man, let's go.
That's right, Aaron. I'll let you go because you're on time. I will just quickly say, and I think your article was sort of quite poorly researched and quite bitingly written. I think a lot of the wording and content was a little bit crass and came across as a little bit arrogant. But having spoken to you, Aaron, I think I see your point. I see where you were coming from. And I thank you for the time.
Well, Joseph, first of all, I appreciate you giving me a platform to kind of explain myself. I hope that people will listen to my side of things. I don't really care if they like me. Listen, you know, I'm kind of at the point in my career where I'm over, you know, and the thing is, and people that have followed me for years, they know what I'm about and they know that they might not agree with me every time, but that I come from a good place, that I believe what I say. And I told you at the beginning and I stand by it is I regret some of the verbiage that I used, the way that I phrased things. And frankly, just by not coming out and bluntly saying that there were better options if RJ Hampton legitimately wanted the best possible path. That's my own. And if there's one thing to take away, that's my only regret. And if I'm not encouraging people to, it's a funny story. I was going to, you know, when I was in the middle of the storm last night, it was last night here in the States. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I think you'll get a little more context if you listen to my podcast. And then I could just envision 1,000 people in Australia. No, just 1,000 people in Australia going on my podcast page and giving my podcast 1 star. And, you know, that screws some things up. You're a podcast guy, you know. So, I hope people have a broader perspective. They don't have to agree with me. You know, this, like you said, it'll all blow over here and there. I'm still 24 hours later, still getting plenty. But I'm really excited that somebody, you know, with your stature gave me the platform. I'm excited to share it with people. Hopefully they have my perspective now and, you know, they can go back to hating me, but maybe just hating me a little bit less. And by the way, I'll say one thing. I got to convince the NBL to fly me over to get to a couple to prove me wrong.
If, if that happens, would you wear? If they said to you, "Yeah, come out and watch the Sydney Kings play Perth Wildcats, Bandits, whatever they want to do," would you sit there and would you just take it? That'd be great. That'd be really good theater if you came over and sat courtside and just left it.
You know, here's the thing: I live my life out in the open. I would broadcast it. I would tell you. I would hit up Mark Gottlieb, tell him to save me a seat on press row, because I have no shame. And my whole thing is, you and I, we talk about sports for a living. And sometimes, like you said, you're going to say something that's crass and stupid and could have been better researched. And sometimes you're going to be right. And, you know, but at the end of the day, I can't speak for anybody else. I take the approach. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a policeman. I'm not fighting crime. I'm not curing cancer. I'm just talking about hoops, man. And I stick by what I said, but I'll shut up now, but I appreciate you giving me this platform just to kind of talk it out a little bit.
Cool. Aaron, couldn't agree more. Thanks very much, my friend. Have a nice day. And I'll be listening. Good luck with the NBL. Like, I really hope that podcast comes through because I'd love to listen to it.
Yeah, I'm hoping it comes through as well. I'll keep you updated. And obviously my legions of admirers in Australia. Yeah.
Aaron, thanks very much, my friend. Good luck.